one of our precious souls, Janae Entz, put on Jesus Christ in baptism. This past week at camp, Ty Hendricks did the same, and I was informed yesterday that Christelle Norgulin has done the same in the time that she has been in camp in California, right? And from discussions that I've had with some others of our youth, I know we have several who are considering and really looking deep within themselves to determine if it's the move that they need to make. And we pray that they will decide to do that very soon. I know that it is sometimes considered a little uncouth or improper to use a deep personal example to kick off a sermon, but I pray that you will indulge me for a little bit tonight as I'd like to share with you some things that have been kind of rummaging around in my mind the last about week or so. On October 31st, 1981, a little boy was born, the firstborn of a young Alabama couple. And it didn't take long for the doctors to figure out that something just wasn't quite right with this little baby. Due to a birth defect known as an esophageal fistula, the child was unable to swallow and consume food. And so within hours of his birth, the boy was lying on an operating table, receiving a feeding tube and corrective surgeries that would ultimately save his life. However, the boy would also be left with a couple of rather unique and distinct scars that would go with him for the rest of his life. And for a while, it was fun to say, I have two belly buttons. And then the realization hits that not everyone has two belly buttons. In fact, no one else I know has two belly buttons. And when people find out that I do, the question and answer sessions begin. And maybe it's just better that I keep them hidden and stay quiet about them so that I don't have to deal with the embarrassment of being so different. In a world that is obsessed with having or at least giving the appearance of perfection, you know, it's no wonder that a person would try to hide his or her bodily scarring. And without fail, there is a question that has gone through every single one of our minds when, at least at some point or another, when we've seen a cut or burn or some other type of scar that we see on someone else, and the question that we want to know is, what happened to you? We wonder this because the body was not created with such markings. And they are the result of something that perhaps and probably has gone awry within God's creation, whether through injury or illness or perhaps just simple carelessness on our part in living our lives. And so we become curious as to what exactly has occurred in this person's life that caused them to lose that physical perfection that perhaps they were born with. But amidst this infatuation with physical perfection, we need to be taking a careful look at the dangers of spiritual and emotional scarring. Because just as a physical scar can indicate certain things about a person's life, so can spiritual ones. And tonight I'd like to take a few minutes and share with you some observations about personal scars and the impact that they can have on a life. And the first of those observations is this. Scars indicate imperfection. Paul in Romans 7:24 cries out, "O wretched man that I am, who will deliver me from this body of death?" What do you think it is that brings a man like Paul to his knees with such a cry? I mean, after all, Paul was the salt of the earth kind of guy. Circumcised on the eighth day, a Hebrew above Hebrews from the tribe of Benjamin, a Pharisee who studied under one of the greatest teachers of the day, Gamaliel. And in regards to righteousness found in law, blameless. Sounds a lot like some of us, doesn't he? Been attending church since I was 8 days old. I'm a salt of the earth kind of person. I attended every youth activity as a teenager. I've listened to some of the Brotherhood's greatest preachers, and I've read the commentaries of countless others. And in regards to righteousness found in keeping God's law, I am blameless. If this is your thought about yourself, let me ask you a couple of questions. Have you ever told a lie? Have you ever taken something that did not belong to you? Have you ever accused someone else of doing something that they really didn't do? Have you ever done something that you knew to be wrong? If you can say yes to any of the above questions, then there's a problem. Because you see, in James chapter 2, verse 10, James writes for us, "For whoever keeps the whole law and yet stumbles in one point, he has become guilty of all of it." You live a perfect life, and on your deathbed you tell one lie. You've broken God's law. Sin is the imperfection that causes the scars on the soul. And these scars are left directly on the person committing the sin through the consequences paid. The liar is left with no one who trusts him. The teenage mother and father are forced to put aside or put on hold or completely do away with some of the dreams that they've had for their lives. The adulterer is left without a family. But sadly, those we sin against are also left with scars that they didn't necessarily deserve. You discover that your best friend has lied to you for a long time, and now you can't put your trust in them. A child is abused by an adult and left to battle years of shame and guilt. A spouse is left questioning why he or she was not able to keep a marriage intact. And when we look at our own lives and the lives of those around us, we can see the spiritual scars. And when we see those spiritual scars, we know that imperfection is present. We know that sin has invaded and impacted the life, tarnishing the perfection that God had created. But another aspect about scars is that scars don't go away. This is perhaps one of the worst realities that a person must come to understand when they find themselves the recipient of scarring. And especially if this person is one who has prided themselves on the beauty of their own body or on the purity of their own soul, this is a bitter pill to swallow. Because no matter where you go or what you do, there will always be something left behind to remind you of that imperfection. Even if it's nothing more than a memory that you can never take back. How many times do you think Paul in his life looked back at his early years and longed for an opportunity to take back the persecutions that he had leveled against other Christians? Or do you think that maybe even in his old age, Peter, every now and then would get this urge to be able to go back to that night in that courtyard while Jesus was standing trial and have another go at either admitting that he knows him or denying that he knows him? You know, patients who have surgeries to repair a severe injury or illness go through a process of rehab. And with weeks of exercise, rest, and medications, they hope to get themselves back to the condition that they were in before the injury. But even then, there is always the mark that reminds them of the whole episode. The problem, though, is that once sin enters into our lives and leaves its scar on our heart and soul, no amount of exercise or no amount of rest can remove the damage that it has wrought, that it has wrought in our lives. We cannot reach down within ourselves to find the extra strength to do enough spiritual things that will make the pain and consequences of the sin go away. And thus we have statements such as these in the Scriptures. Romans 3:19. Now we know that whatever the law says, it speaks to those who are under the law, so that every mouth may be closed and all the world may become accountable to God. Or in Galatians chapter 3, verse 21. For if a law had been given which was able to impart life, then righteousness would indeed have been based upon law. Folks, we must understand that just like the scars on our bodies, the scars on our souls don't just simply go away on their own. We have to deal with them and live with them. But you know, not every scar that is inflicted results in spiritual death. One day when I was about 11 or 12 years old, we were sitting, I have this memory very, very vividly in my mind. We were sitting in our 1986 light blue Dodge Caravan with the plastic seats. We had just left our neighborhood and had turned right onto Winchester Road, headed towards Blue Springs. It's this path we drove a lot. And I made some comment, some complaint about the scars that were on my body. And at the age, I had just really kind of come to an understanding of what plastic surgery was. And I think part of my question was, is there a way to cover up scars like that? And my mom made a statement that has stuck in my mind ever since. She said, Corey, if you don't have those scars, you're not alive. Without those scars, you are not here. So why be ashamed of them? Please listen, if you would, as I read out of the book of Isaiah. He was despised and forsaken of men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with much grief. And like one from whom men hide their face, he was despised, and we did not esteem him. Surely our griefs he himself bore, and our sorrows he carried. Yet we ourselves esteemed him stricken, smitten of God and afflicted. But he was pierced through for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The chastening for our well-being fell upon him. If every other scar brings shame and it brings death, how is it that I can be healed by his wounds? What is it about Jesus' scars that make them so powerful? And one of the hardest lessons for mankind to understand, and I'm convinced that in this day and age, in this modern era, it's becoming more and more difficult for us to get this message across. But one of the most difficult lessons for us to understand is that every sin ever committed must be paid for. Everyone in the past, everyone in the present, and every sin that is going to be committed must be paid for. And as Paul tells us in Romans, the wages of sin is death. If I sin, I die. But in Romans 3:25, we read that God displayed Jesus publicly as a propitiation. big word we don't use much these days. The NIV says that God displayed him publicly as a sacrifice of atonement. So what is this sacrifice of atonement? What is the propitiation? You see, it's the picture, it's a picture word, that of an altar sacrifice. Imagine yourself as the faithful Jewish servant living back in the Old Testament days. And you bring one day to the priest a small lamb for a sin offering. And having inspected him thoroughly to make sure there are no blemishes, no spots, no imperfections, the priest gives you a nod, a gesture of approval. And then you hold that little lamb underneath his head. And you pick his head up and you look into those eyes, knowing that what you are about to do, what you are about to put this animal through, he doesn't deserve it. He doesn't deserve this at all. But you look into those eyes, into that face of innocence, and you reach your knife below his neck, and as you slide the knife through, the blood flows freely. And this little lamb dies because of what you did. Because of what you did. For many, many years, I had this picture in my head or this understanding that the reason Jesus came to earth and died was because Satan demanded that Jesus pay his life. I don't think that's right. You see, a sacrifice is made to appease someone's anger, to appease someone's wrath. Whose wrath is needed? Whose wrath do we need to appease? It's not Satan's. He has every one of us in a chokehold. The last thing he wants to do is give it up. It's God's wrath that needs to be appeased. And somebody's got to die for the sins. And so Jesus steps forward and he says, I'll do it. I'll do it, God. And he comes to this earth, the innocent lamb. He doesn't deserve what he goes through. He knows it. God knows it. The people who surrounded him, they know it. But because of what you did, and because of what I did, Jesus was displayed publicly as the sacrifice of atonement, so that I would not have to die. And now he stands in a closed room, surrounded by his closest followers. Peace be with you, he says as he looks around. And then he turns to Thomas, and Jesus extends his arms out and he says, reach with your fingers here. And reach with your hand into my side. And do not be unbelieving, but believing. Because you have seen me, have you believed? Blessed are those who did not see and yet have believed. So tell me, are you believing or unbelieving? Are you hiding the scars in your life and keeping everyone else at arm's length so that you don't have to show the imperfection and the pain and the agony that you struggle with day in and day out? If that's the case, then let me ask you, how's that going for you? What has that done for you? Do you find solace in your isolation? Or do you long for someone to help you alleviate the burden? Why not let Jesus take all of it? Why not let Him carry all of the burden of your pain and your agony and your scars? He was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our sins. The punishment that brought us peace was upon Him. And by His wounds, we are healed. If you need to respond to God's invitation, He stands there with open arms while we stand and sing.
You have to be an expert at this. There, thank you. I look for off and on. I got a new computer, and I haven't quite figured out how it works yet. It doesn't work like my old one. If I